Welcome to the third episode in our CME podcast series on improving the transition process for pediatric IBD patients. During this series, we will highlight challenging cases. The series is sponsored by the Children's Digestive Health and Nutrition Foundation, along with the North American Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition. A special thank you to CentiCor for providing support. I'm Dr. Anthony Otley, chair of the program and associate professor at the Department of Pediatrics at the IWK Health Center in Halifax, Canada. This podcast focuses on mastering the art of transfer. Our faculty today is Dr. Lori Fishman, assistant professor in pediatrics at Harvard Medical School and director of medical education in GI at Children's Hospital in Boston, and Janice Arnold, a social worker also at Children's Hospital, Boston.
The transfer process is really just the last step in a long process of transition, but today we're going to focus just on this actual transfer step. Patients tend to be aware that we're pediatric providers. Let's talk about Joe as a typical 17-year-old and follow him as he navigates his transfer. Let's say he's got ileocolonic Crohn's disease diagnosed 5 years ago, and he's 17 now. Typically, he might say something like this. Hey, doc, I turn 18 next month. Can I still come to see you in December? Whether they say it aloud or not, many patients are really wondering at what age I'll be, quote, kicked out. And often by the time a patient or parent actually asks the question, it really has been haunting them for years. So therefore, it's very helpful to state your practice a few years before the transfer. So I typically start talking about it when they're 15 or 16. And I'll just launch in and say, you know, I typically see patients through age 21 or until they get a job or graduate from college. But when the time gets closer, we'll spend plenty of time making sure you're ready to graduate for me. And I joke that, Joe, you're stuck with me for quite a while. The relief from patients is often palpable in the room.
I agree, Lori. I find that they feel reassured when they know they'll be able to rely on us to broker them through the process and help them anticipate that. A few visits before what will ultimately be the last one, I start to gently remind them of this pending graduation, something to the effect of, you know, you're a junior this year, which means next year will be our last year together. If the visits are farther apart, every 6 months or a year apart, I'd often mention it up to a year ahead of time. If the visits are more frequent, every 1 to 3 months, for example, I'd perhaps start to gently remind them about 6 months ahead of time, and then certainly bringing it up again at the visit prior to the last one. This will help them anticipate it as an exciting milestone, but it's also important to invite their feelings at any of these points of dialogue.
And then we have to realize these are not set in stone. So, you know, if there's a complete crisis, I'll overtly change the plan. Perhaps there's a death in the family or a loss of a parent job or a move or a surgery, then I'll sit down and say, you know, let's postpone things for 3 months until your life settles down. But if Joe is having a huge flare, it might not be the time to change. But remember, the new doctor might want to do the colonoscopy and discuss a new medicine. So, you know, Joe really doesn't need to be in perfect remission to transfer. I find too many providers keep putting off the transfer, waiting for that perfect remission. And again, that probably won't happen. Really, it's the giant crisis that will make us postpone it. And I give them a time frame. We're going to postpone it for 3 months. We're going to postpone it for 6 months. So again, the patient isn't left sort of hanging. It's very important that the new doctor has a summary of Joe's care. But I make sure that Joe has a copy, too, because sometimes the summary never gets to the new doctor. What if he needs to go to the emergency room sometime in the middle? I try to actually sit down and review the summary with Joe somewhere at a visit near the end of our time together, but that doesn't always happen. So what I often do is I send Joe a summary of their history and say, you know, can you just preview it and make sure there are no mistakes and make sure I've gotten everything right? While I'm asking them to preview it and checking it, it really is a way to get them to read it through and make sure they know what's in the summary.
Lori, that's a great idea. It also helps reinforce that they really are in charge of their own health care. A few months before the ultimate transfer, obviously Joe needs to find that new doctor. So we discuss how to go about it. I think it's very important to invite Joe to be part of the decision-making process because this could then make it more likely that he'll be invested in it being a successful outcome if he feels he was a partner in it. Discussing concrete preferences, like gender preference of the new physician, whether or not Joe would prefer a larger academic center where he can get lab work done at the same location, or whether he prefers a private, quieter office setting. Does the new setting need to be accessible to public transportation? Does he have any concerns about being able to have access to a car? Then I think it's important to work with the physician and find a few names for him, if possible, which really helps imply that there isn't only one person with this expertise, but there are many. And should one not have openings or the time frames not work with his schedule, there's backups. He'll obviously have to help check with his insurance. A lot of times, patients are in the position of finding a new internist as well, and that person can also be a referral source for potential GI physicians. Again, this just emphasizes that there's lots of options. We just need to figure out logistically how we're going to get him to the new physician.
That's exactly it, Janice. And I think one of the things we have to remember is to really highlight the positive. I think, you know, it seems obvious, but if we refer to it in positive terms, it makes a huge difference for the patient. So I usually talk about it as a graduation rather than saying, I'm kicking you out or, you know, you have to leave me now. And we really talk about the advantages of adult care. So I'll overtly talk about that the new provider is going to know more about work-related issues or having children or being pregnant or dealing with blood clots or screening for cancer, many issues that come up with adults and really don't come up with kids. And I'll often say, you know, the adult provider has knowledge that you need now, and I don't have as much of this because I really treat children. It seems so obvious that when the pediatric provider talks about the adult provider in positive terms, the transfer works better, and that's been shown over and over. And we talk about how this transition is similar to other life transitions. So when you graduate from high school, the first time at a sleepover, other times where you're taking steps away from the known and comfortable. And we'll often talk about how Joe has done this before and it feels a little strange at the beginning, but it's going to go well. We talk about what the new office is actually going to feel like and how the new adult culture is different so that the first time they walk in, it's not completely surprising and they don't think the differences are just, oh, the doctor doesn't like me. It's, you know, this doctor is treating me with respect. The new doctor has a different culture, a different style, and they sort of know how to take it when they walk into that new setting.
I agree, Lori. That's a very important distinction to help them anticipate. One of the other pieces of this transfer process that I often get feedback from the patients as being the most meaningful is really getting personal with them, talking about how sad it is to say goodbye for both us as the medical team and the patient. I think it's important for us as the medical team members to offer a personal memory or an observation, recalling when we first met them, whatever age they were at, commenting on how mature they are now, making a comment about, remember when you weren't sure you'd get through middle school, or remember when we were waiting for your first prom, things that help join you guys together again so that they know that this isn't a casual experience for us as a medical team either. It's critical to say goodbye to both the patient and the family. Even if at this point visits are quite independent with just the patient alone, parents, I think, should be invited back in for the last visit to say a proper goodbye. We obviously want to send the message to patients of autonomy and independence, but certainly don't ever want to exclude the critical role that the family has played along the way. It's important, I think, to give appropriate ways for contact up to a medical team member's preference, whether it's email or phone calls or letter writing, and commenting that we'd really love to hear when you get that big job in New York or when you graduate college and how things are working out for you, and invite them to do so. I'll often offer that I look forward to letters I get years later from patients and how happy it makes us to know how their lives have turned out. Additionally, at the end of some of these conversations, I'll often make a point to compliment the grace and sophistication with which they've handled a difficult transition process, and then invite them to almost be a mentor to other young adults in the future who are going through this transition and transfer process. I found that that invitation alone can sometimes propel a young adult to want to make it more successful.
I agree completely, and I think it's so important for them to have an appropriate way to contact us, that they're now an autonomous adult on to the next stage of their life, but they can let us know how they're doing and that we still care. This is very, very different from coming back as our patient. And I think one of the things we have to be prepared for is that many patients are going to go to that first visit with the adult provider and then ask to come back. For certain patients, especially when I anticipate this is going to happen, I'll plan a single visit for them after they meet their new adult provider. And I'll say, you know what, you're going to go meet your new provider, then we're going to have one last visit, and we'll talk about how that visit went and what it felt like, because invariably there are going to be things that are different about that and things that we need to talk about and figure out how you're going to get through. And that way it gives them a deadline. They have to make the visit with the adult provider before our next visit. And it means that they don't have to deal with the newness of the new visit and the goodbye exactly at the same moment. For other patients, we really will say goodbye first, and then they're going to go on to the next provider. But again, that that newness, that different culture, often prompts patients to call us and ask to come back. And I think we have to remember it's more helpful to the patient if we help them problem solve through what was difficult or what was unusual about that visit for them, rather than just allowing them to run away from the new adult care. You know, the office feels strange, the new doctor doesn't know them. These are very, very typical complaints. We have to remind them that when they first came to see us, we didn't know them either. And when they first came to see us, the office felt strange as well. We have to work them through. We do have to listen carefully to make sure there isn't a true mismatch for the patient and the doctor, in which case we can help them find another doctor. But I think it's very important for them not to just come back to pediatric care, because it really allows them not to work through these issues.
Great point, Lori. And the goal through all this is really helping voice confidence in them and their abilities to make this transfer. I think the overarching theme of the art of this kind of transfer process is really rooted in some anticipatory guidance. And from that comes a lot of the logistical conversations. We want to let the patient know far in advance when this ultimate transfer will happen so they don't feel blindsided by it, reminding them often, you know, 6 to 12 months ahead, and then about 3 to 6 months ahead, beginning to search for the new GI doctor. We want to remember to provide the medical summary to the patient themselves and the new physician to ease that correspondence. We certainly want to emphasize the positive aspects of the new provider and what they can add to the patient's quality of life, and remind a patient that it might indeed feel different for a while. Having that personal touch is critical, and it is personal. We've often seen these patients grow up, celebrated many milestones with them, and we want to give it that due respect. So discussing sadness and growth, and certainly being prepared for problem solving if the patient tries to return.
I think this is going to be very helpful for people as they begin to think through the whole transfer process and consider this the capstone of the whole transition process.
Thanks for a great dialogue.
Thank you, Janice.
Thanks for listening to this episode in the CME podcast series on improving the transition process for pediatric IBD patients. Go to pedibd.org to subscribe to receive future episodes. I'm Tony Otway.